Thanks for joining me on the Boise Art Scene Podcast. I'm Morgan McCullum here with Max and Joseph of the band Deep Heaven, here to talk a little bit about their new single and their plans for the rest of the year. Thanks for joining me.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So tell me a little bit about your band and the type of music that you play.
Yeah, we like consider ourselves a post-punk band, kind of in the dream pop shoegaze environ.
Yeah.
So when I was listening to some of the songs, they kind of had, for me, my initial impression, I almost felt like a Depeche Mode feel. But then when I actually like went and listened to Depeche Mode, I was like, no, you guys are completely different. But, you guys have that modern, like synthetic sound that, and very chill, kind of not lo-fi. You guys have a lot of layers to your stuff.
I mean, Depeche Mode's definitely an influence for
sure. Yeah, that's probably my fault, honestly. I love Depeche Mode. I think we take a lot of that kind of 80s influence, but we try and make it new, you know?
Yeah.
We try and make it, we're futurists.
Max,
you know?
Yeah, we're futurists.
Yeah.
Max takes the Depeche Mode and I take the Cure.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
Maybe our two 80s
bastions.
Yeah. And Alan Wilder is definitely like my synth hero, probably. So at least he's up there, top tier for me. So.
Yeah. Well, like, I don't know. There's a specific sound. I don't know what it is, but like to the 80s stuff. And like you guys, although you are with the synthesizers and stuff, it's got that modern vibe to
it for sure.
I didn't know if I would be insulting by saying that it reminded me of Depeche Mode.
No, not at all. I mean,
that's an honor.
I think there is a thing though, where like people see a band with like a lot of synthesizers going on, and they're like, "Oh, you guys are like an '80s band," and it's like, "Yeah, but no, you know, it's kind of like, it's not insulting at all." But
yeah, well,
I don't want to get like in my mind, I'm like, I don't want to get pigeonholed as like
an '80s
revival band.
The cliche is like the '80s. Nostalgia, which I would say that we do dabble in nostalgia.
Oh yeah, for sure.
We're guilty of all these things, and I will absolutely happily admit to it. But I think also too, we just one of our friends, I feel like, put it really nicely to us one time. He was being very complimentive, and he said that it was like we took all those instruments and then just kind of made our own stuff with them.
Yeah, no, I mean, you guys definitely, I mean, when you said The Cure, like I kind of could get that vibe from the lyrics or the sound of the vocals anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I think that you guys do a good job of tying into that retro sound, but also, you know, again, modernizing it. And for whatever reason, you know, there's something about 80s music in general that I'm not a huge fan of, but I can get behind your guys' music.
That's the best compliment we've gotten so far. I love it.
I'm horrible at speaking, obviously, so I do a podcast. But so tell me a little bit about what you guys are doing now. Before we started recording, you said that you have been releasing singles fairly regularly this year.
Yeah, we're trying to do every 6 weeks.
And you're building up to hopefully a release later?
Yeah, I think we're still trying to hold off on an album, but we're going to do a 4-song EP in the fall.
That's awesome. Do you have any plans for that or what materials you might get that pressed on? Like,
we're definitely going to do tape and CD.
Oh, I love
it.
Those are going to be the two main ones. And we talked about doing, what was a 7-inch?
Yeah, we want to do a 7-inch, like, because we have the two singles we already released, Agony and The Last Place We Met. I don't think we're going to put those on the 4-track, but I think it would be super sick to get those on a 7-inch, just like a dual-sided single. Like, so, yeah, we've been talking with Phil and Ange from Moon Ruins Records, and they're super supportive and helpful, and they've put out some really awesome stuff for local bands. And so we just had a like first meeting with them a few weeks ago, and they're awesome local people. And you know,
I hadn't heard of them before.
That's
fantastic. It's always amazing to me. Part of what I love about doing this is getting to learn about how many people are out here doing stuff and the variety of things. And, you know, it's hard to think of Boise having like multiple recording studios and things like that. But, you know, it does. They're not all the big fancy, you know, multi-million dollar studios, but there's some people doing some great sound and stuff. Music mastering is one of those just black arts to me.
Right. Oh yeah, we hired a mastering engineer.
We finally caved. Yeah. Couldn't do it.
I feel like I was losing my mind trying to master stuff. Like
We would have friends that were saying like stuff. I was like, I don't even know what you're saying right now. I don't understand what you're talking about. What is that? You know, mid-side process. I don't even want to know what it is.
So do you guys do, we're at your studio here. Is this where you do most of your...
Yeah, this is where we do. It was at Max's house for a little bit. And then we managed to get this, place a few months ago. So we moved it over here, but we've done everything in here so far.
Yeah.
So what got you guys into, synthesized music? is it just, are you fans or...
I've been a synth guy from way back. I think like one of my early music memories, like I think I gained consciousness as a human being to Enya. I don't know if that's like a real 90s kid thing or something, you know, I was just like, I remember being a kid and like hearing just like how otherworldly it sounded. And I was just like, this is amazing. And then my dad had like a Pet Shop Boys greatest hits record. And that was like, I loved that. And then like, yeah, he had like an 80s compilation. I was just like, I don't know what these sounds are, but I'm just like obsessed with them. And then I got into like, you know, earlier internet, you know, MP3 sites and stuff like that. I was really into like finding kind of like cool dance music and stuff. Like, you know, I was definitely like listening to Daft Punk and stuff. And when I go back and like check out my old hard drives, I'm like, oh, I actually like found some cool stuff back in the day. But yeah, I've had I'm definitely the synth guy.
Yeah.
I think I usually, it's kind of like a contagion where I spread it to people and like other bands I've been in, I show up and I'm like, hey, I'm the synth guy with the keyboards. And they're like, oh, is it like a piano? And I'm like, no. And then like 3 years later, all the other dudes in my bands have like 5 synthesizers each. And they're like, why did you do this to me? You know? So that's kind of my world. And yeah, I don't know. There's something about the craft of like making a sound that's like completely unique, you know, even though it might be something that's like definitely harkening back to like, I want it to sound like this, you know, and trying to like, you know, especially being a kid or a younger musician and you're like trying to emulate things you love, you know, like Depeche Mode, for instance. And you're like, I want to make, you know, this bass sound on this track is like so awesome and like, you know, very significant to the song and the tonality of it all. And you're like trying to copy it and be like, what did they use? Well, I don't have that, so I'm going to try and make it with this. And then you kind of synthesize it, you know, not necessarily like synthesize it on a synthesizer, but like in your mind, you're synthesizing like something that becomes its own through you, becomes unique, because you can't like actually copy something exactly unless you go back and like take a sample of it or something, or you know the exact preset they used or whatever. But it kind of becomes something new to you because it's like, and I think that's what all musicians do. It's like all these influences kind of combine and then are filtered through your unique perspective and skill set, then that kind of becomes its own sound. And like, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, especially if you like look around online and watch like guitar videos or synth videos, it's like a bunch of people like, here's how to sound like this, but here's how to sound like this band. But I think getting past that and being like, yeah, I want to be influenced by this, but also add my unique spin on it. I think that's what gives it that kind of modern futuristic thing, because it is like, it's something that's never been heard before. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, you guys have a unique sound, 100%, you know. And I'm always fascinated when I see like synths on the internet and like the stacks and craziness some people do. One guy that keeps popping up for me, it wasn't synths, but he does electronic music and stuff. And he had this crazy setup with a loop of tape that was like a 1 minute loop that he could like adjust the speed of, and it would like, it had a record head followed immediately by a playhead, and it would like, so he could warp his voice in almost real time.
Oh yeah. We love tape too. Yeah. I think that's treating stuff with like older analog equipment. You know, I think it's like you said, there's some kind of like dark art to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're not really sure like what's happening, but there's some sort of electronic
vibe. Like, when we were recording Agony, we were in the last place we met, we were just like banging our head against a wall. We just couldn't get it to sound like a texture, if you will. Mm. And we had a 4-track, like a Tascam MK2
Porta Studio.
Yeah. And we bounced it through there and then back into Ableton, and it was just like, oh, there it is. That's what we are missing.
Yeah, I every once in a while, you know, my main stuff is video. And I've got a... The other day I was running things into a VCR and then back out and into the computer so that it could get that like weird analog degradation from it.
That's something we want to experiment with more in our like visual stuff, is the analog degradation, especially with like the old VCR type. We might have to get some ideas from you.
Oh, there. Yeah. I mean, I'm not very artistic with it, of course, but, the video feedback stuff, that you can do is super fun. I used to have a lot of fun with, green screens and feeding those back when my kid was little, especially. So yeah, tell me a little bit about your, how you guys got together to make music together.
Yeah. So I had just moved to Boise, and, I was driving past Push and Pour up on the bench, and there's like this big party going on, and I rolled our window down and was like talking to somebody. I was like, what's going on? And they're like, oh, it's an album release party. So we go in, and, I just start talking to people there, and it was June, who's such a fantastic musician in the scene. He just released an album.
June Campion, right?
Yeah, June Campion, yeah.
Okay.
And he introduced me to his producer, and his producer's roommate was standing there, and we started talking, and he's a drummer. He's the drummer in their band. His name's Wade. And he was like, oh, yeah, I teach drum lessons. And I was like, oh, I'd really like to take some drum lessons. So I start taking drum lessons. And then I just, you know, we'd be talking. And I was like, I really want to get more involved in the music scene. And he's like, well, my buddy Max does sound at Neuralux. And I was like, sick. And he's like, I'll give you his number. So then I texted Max, showed up to Neuralux, helped a band load in. And I did that twice. And then we kind of hit it off. And, and then we just started hanging out and talking about music more and more, and found we had a ton in common with taste and kind of artistic vision. Mm-hmm. And I think I had like a song that I'd written like a few years ago. And I finally was like, Max, like, just come over. Like, let's try and record this. And I bought it, talking about the synth disease spreading, I bought a synth off Max. And gotten this drum machine that he recommended, and he came over, and I have no idea still how to use any of them. And he came over and MIDI sequenced everything, and we turned this like little folk song that I'd written into like a sort of war on drugs vibe, and we felt really good about it, and we just started making more music after that.
Oh, that's super cool. So are you mostly the lyricist then, or do you both?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of like, I kind of help you edit more or less, you know, or like I might have like an idea here or there, like what if you said this, or what if this was like the hook, or you know. But
Max is also like you've been a really good like voice of reason for me if I'm overthinking something, or if I'm like, is this dumb? And you know, he'll be like, yeah, or no, you need to lean into that more. So
that's a good creative partner though, right?
Yeah,
somebody that can keep you in check a little bit, like you said.
And it's been great for me too, like, just because I'm synth illiterate and just kind of production wise, not particularly. I have like, I don't know, there's people that say they can hear like the whole song, and I just don't have that. I can like maybe hear a vibe, but Max is just like so incredibly talented at making a song fill out, and then I can just, it's really helped me, you know, be able to not worry like, oh, is it going to also sound cool? Because I'm like, okay, it's totally going to sound cool. And I can like really focus on lyrics and stuff.
So how do your songs come together? I mean, obviously it's a collaborative process, but is it, do you guys, I'm always fascinated by that process. You know, as somebody who, I love lyrics, but I can't write a poem to save my life, you know? you know, and I love music, but I'm also not, I've dabbled in bass, but I'm not a musician, you know? So yeah. What's the process like when you guys, are working on a song?
Well, a lot of times like Joseph will just come to me with like a guitar idea usually, 'cause Joseph's also the guitarist, and you know, some chords or a riff and then like a melody. And I think we both agree like melody is like key to a song. Mm, yeah. And if there's not something melodic that's like going to draw you into the song, it's not really, it works in both ways. Like when you're writing a song, it's almost like when you're listening to a song for the first time. And like, if you don't hear something that kind of catches your ear, you're never going to like finish writing the song unless you're like really disciplined and like, you know, just, and we've had a few songs like that where we come back to the whiteboard every now and then and we're like, all right, let's try and hash this one out. And it's just like, all right, something about this isn't working. But yeah, usually Joseph comes to me with a melody and a, you know, maybe a chord progression, and then we just kind of take it from there. You know, I usually, you know, start building like a drum track, you know, like a rhythm section. So it's kind of like drum machine and like a bass synthesizer. And then, you know, if that kind of supports the guitar well, and then it kind of comes down to like an arrangement mindset where you're like, all right, what's carrying the harmony? You know, is there going to be a big, like, is it going to be a keyboard chord? And are you playing the chords on the guitar? So I'm not going to play chords too, because that just kind of becomes this big, you know, we definitely love that kind of like wall of sound shoegaze vibe too. Mm. But you know, you kind of have to like pick and choose your instrument like focus, because when things, you know, everything kind of has its place, and it's kind of like building this big like layer cake of sound, you know. And so we usually kind of start there and figure out what pieces do what. And then, you know, a lot of times we'll just start, you know, once we kind of have the genesis of the song, which is usually like a guitar part and a drum track and maybe a bass line, then it just kind of starts coming to filling in all the details. And then, you know, we start thinking about like, all right, well, how does the vocal melody really work over this? You know, what are we saying? Like, how is the song arranged? Is this like a 3-minute pop song, or is this like a 6-minute epic ballad or whatever? You know, you kind of like, and you're like, okay, this, you know, a lot of times you're like, oh, this kind of reminds me of like, I want to do something like this song that we like. And then you like pull it up and you're like, okay, it's like this fast. So what if we'd made it like as fast as this song and try to fit it into a 3-minute thing? And you kind of like, I really like taking structures.
Oh yeah.
From songs like that. Like, I think that really helps when you're like in that mode where like you have this cool melody or a hook or an idea, and then you're like, all right, well, we need to like find a roadmap basically. And then, so we'll just basically count out a song that, you know, we might kind of feel is a vibe we're going for. And you'll be like, all right, well, there's 12 bars of a verse, and then there's a chorus, and it goes back to the verse again, and there's a bridge. And so you kind of like write that out and then think what can go where.
Yeah, that's how we did Agony.
Yeah.
Agony was a Cocteau Twins song that we'd been listening to a bunch. And we were like, okay, let's have this many bars for the verse. And that song, I will come to Max with like a melody or like some guitar chords. But a lot of times too, Max will have like, he'll be like, hey, I just made this cool break beat. What do you think of this? And then I'll play it, and I'll come up with like a guitar line, and we'll just bounce off of each other like that. And so last place we met was almost entirely written on this little Electron Syntact drum machine. Max had come up with this beat that just sounded so cool. And we had the first half of the song pretty well ironed out. And we were like, well, where does it go from here? Because it was just verses. And I was like, let's not do a chorus. Let's just have a complete vibe change. Let's have the song, like, you come up with this huge, just earth-shattering bass, like synth bass that, and it's like, so it's like I hit a pedal and I'm all of a sudden the guitar is clean and huge and washy and there's just this bass synth and we just play it out the last half of the song like that. So it is very organic how each of the songs comes to be, and we have found formulas that work for us. But
so then are you mostly starting then with from a melody rather, or like the beats and the melody rather than coming up with like words that you want to say? Do the words come secondary, or?
I think if we're coming from like a, there has been a few songs, we haven't released it yet, but we have this song that we're currently calling Monte Cristo. That one started out with a little lyric idea that was just like, we found interesting, and that then turned into the whole song. I think with The Last Place We Met, we kind of came up with the vibe, and then we're like, well, what do we want this to feel like? And Max threw out an idea, and I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then we just kind of came up with lyrics that fit into that world.
Well, and you know, you guys, even though it's even though your music is fairly chill, it does have that like super strong bassy, like it was booming my car as I was driving around, you know, but not, you know, not overpoweringly. It's got that good electronic beat. Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts of electronic music, you know, is that just heavy, deep bassy beat.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
I think that's kind of the calling card of electronic, you know, music. So I'm just always fascinated by the creative process that people go through. I create things, but I'm not a from whole cloth creator. So when people are able to like start at some point and then just build on it into something, you know, epic, it's just really cool. How long have you guys been together as a band, as Deep Heaven?
We played our first show last June, so we've been performing for a year, but I think when did we record that first song? Was that like December or January of like either?
It might have been October.
Yeah, it was like October of 23. So I think
like a year and a half.
And have they been local shows that you guys have played?
Yeah.
We've been mostly just sticking local. I think, you know, we definitely want to branch out, and we've made some connections outside of town, but you know, I think it, especially like when you're starting up a band, that's probably the hardest thing to do is like get on the road, and, you know, it's a big endeavor, but we're definitely, I think we've got a good plan to get it up and running here soon.
So do you have any future plans that you want to talk on that front, or just kind of leave it as you're working on?
I mean, we'll be in Spokane. Probably that's the most viable show, next show.
In Salt
Spokane,
Lake,
Probably Salt Lake,
We'd like to hit
Seattle and Portland.
I think just kind of starting, you know, my idea of it is like, because we also like work in the music industry as like our day job, I guess, or night job, I guess. So we see a lot of bands and like kind of see how they operate and what works and what doesn't. And I think that's a big, that's been a big asset for us, is just to kind of learn like, oh, hey, where are you guys going next? And like, you know, seeing how tours are routed and things like that. It, you know, being in a band, like I've been in bands for, you know, over a decade now. And like when I first started, it was like so unimaginable. I'm like, I don't even know how you would do that. Like, it's so hard to book a show in my own town. Like, how do I book a show somewhere else? So now it's kind of become a little bit more, I'm like, I'm starting to understand how that works, but I think
a little less
daunting. I think we're just trying to start, you know, start small and lean and kind of lean into our regional demographic and just like,
yeah,
hey, Northwest, like, you know, are there fun places to play in Idaho, like, that we could just go to? And
yeah,
you know,
and I've been running like Instagram ads with like highly specific demographics. Mm-hmm. It's like people that like are fans of Depeche Mode and New Order, mm-hmm. and The Cure. So just trying to kind of get our faces kind of subconsciously in front of people.
Yeah.
So that when we do move out into, you know, going on a tour, it's like, I mean, even in Boise too, a good friend of mine was kind of explaining his whole idea on building a band is you know, the first goal is to get, you know, 50 people to come to your show. Mm. And then how do you get 100 people and how do you get 150 people? And it's the same thing for, you know, any city you go to is, you know, how do we get, you know, at this point, it's like, how do we get 50 people to come to our show in Seattle? Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is networking with other bands and trading shows, you know. We'll have bands that come through and, you know, they'll be like, yo, can we play a show with you guys? It's like, yeah, sick. So can we play a show with you guys? And it's like, yeah, let's do it. So it's a lot of kind of trading.
Well, I mean, it seems like that's what you would have to do for an industry as, I don't want to say closed off, because I mean, it's you can get into it for sure. But I mean, yeah. It's the general public, you know, I don't necessarily know how to go about booking a venue for something, you know, in that sense for a concert. But yeah, no, I it's interesting to me to hear that you guys are both involved in the music industry and your day jobs in some capacity, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. Something I've thought about, you do have to kind of have some crazy ideas every once in a while. I'm currently working on an alter ego that's a really talented booking agent. And, you know, I haven't come up with a name yet, but, you know, I mean, people might be getting some emails from a very well-connected booking agent to book, you know, the illustrious band Deep Heaven at the
Crocodile. You know.
And, yeah, at the Crocodile. And,
you know, I think that's, you know, that sometimes can be the kind of thing that you have to do, you know, is it somebody's like, oh, it's just one of the band guys. But like,
yeah,
if all of a sudden you've got representation, you know.
Yeah, we do have a band manager. Yeah. We just need to have him. Well, he's actually told us he'll help us out with that. But it is. You almost kind of, I mean, you kind of have to be, very tenacious with,
yeah, and,
with all
and
of
just
it.
Kind of get over that fear of just like reaching out and being rejected and stuff like that. I think, you know, that's something that's taken me my whole career as a musician to get more comfortable with, and like, you know, treating it like more like a business, you know, and like trying to not just like completely lose your ass on touring or whatever it is, you know, like how do we like, all right, you know, we got to buy shirts. Like we made this money off a show we booked and we, you know, we got paid, you know, however much to play the show. So that's like almost enough to cover this order of shirts. And then we sell the shirts and we can buy something else. And then, you know, it is like a weird,
we've been merch rolling.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, just, we live in a society, I guess, you know, it's like, you have to kind of, at some point it comes down to business and, you know.
Yeah, and that's one thing when we started writing too, it was just like, I think just because like Max said, we both work in the industry, it's like we wanted to take it seriously and just like, okay, how do we treat this like a business and be, you know, really aggressive with it and rather than, you know, kind of just like, oh, this is like a fun pro, because we love this. Like, this is absolutely our favorite thing to do. Like, the best days of my week are when Max and I can come in here and record, and when we have a show, you know, it's like, it's an absolute blast. And so, however we can help it to be successful, it's like, we'll do it, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. And hesitation of sounding like a total corporate head or whatever. It's like, how do I have a growth mindset about this?
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, kind of work within our scale and not, you know, overextend. But it's like, what's the next thing we can do to like build up some buzz around us? And like, mm-hmm. you know, how do we record economically? And, you know, now we have a mastering engineer and like that helps our recording sound better, but we got to pay him. And like, you know, yeah. so yeah, just trying to figure out how to stay kind of low to the ground on that stuff has been, you know, it's taken almost, I'd say, a lifetime of experience between the two of us, you yeah. know. And
it's cool though. It's like, it's, I don't know, people kind of complain about the, oh, it sucks that you have to wear all these hats, but I don't know, it's fun. It's like you have, it's like challenging. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, of course, if some label was like, we're gonna give you guys $30,000, go to Norway and record your next album and we're gonna pay for, absolutely, I wouldn't complain about that at all.
Yeah, sure.
And we're gonna market all of it. You don't even have to worry about it. I'd be like, sick. You know, but you know, that's in our 5-year plan, of course. So, yeah. But like, I think, yeah, just being super business oriented, and like, yeah, we have a 5-year band yeah. plan, and we're honestly doing really good.
Yeah. That's
there was fantastic. A bunch of stuff that we're on year two. So mm-hmm. this year that we did in year one, and it was like, hell yeah. You know?
No, I mean, and I, you know, you really do have to think of it from a business mindset, you know, even when it's a creative endeavor, you yeah. know, I have always kind of failed to really embrace that mindset for my own stuff. But as I have all these conversations with people about stuff, you know, that it all comes back to like, you got to, if you want to make money at it, you know, then you have to treat it like a business. Yeah. If you want to treat it as your hobby or your outlet, then, you know, it's okay to,
which I guess also too, like as a caveat, like I get that there's a part of me that has had to, you know, find like a duality to both those things. Cause mm-hmm. it's like at the core of it, it's our art that we're making. And it's like, you know, the lyrics, you know, I'm like, I want them to be honest and vulnerable and something that I can get behind. But it's also like, at the same time, I think maybe I've figured out a way to separate the two in my head mm-hmm. where it's like, I can, you know, we can come in here and have, you know, a great time just making music and having, you know, fun recording and coming up with new ideas. And then there's, you know, we go to Roosevelt Market and we were just like, okay, what's up? What's on the docket this week? Like, have you ran that ad yet? Like, did you email that, you know, promoter? Like, have you gotten back to this person about, you know, shirt orders? You know, it's like, we kind of have both of those things going on. Mm-hmm. And so I think what has maybe made those business meetings more fun is that, you know, we do get so much time to create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not everything I create, you know, gets exposed to the world, or you know, some of it's just because I wanted to create something.
Absolutely, or, yeah.
know? And I think that's you know, this a sign of somebody who is truly, you know, an artist and somebody that likes doing it. You know, if you can make money from it, then that's fantastic to make money from, you know, doing what you love and with your art.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you just enjoy the creation of
exactly.
it, you know, you're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah. And I mean, I think even if we weren't, you know, trying to, you know, have the merch pay for itself, we would be doing the exact same thing. Cause that's something we'll tell each other as like an encouragement, you know, when we're like, oh man, you know, we didn't get that show. We're like, man, we haven't booked our Northwest circuit yet. Mm. Like, it's like, you know what? At the end of the day, Max, it's just us making music.
Yeah, you can never lose sight of the art itself.
Yeah.
I think that's like what's taken me the longest time to kind of come to terms with is like, I came up and I lived in Phoenix for a long time, went to school there, and like I was in this band called the Blank Waves, and we were very like DIY, almost like punk in a scene of like the kind of scene we were in. It was very DIY, and it was very much this kind of brash, like, yeah, we're gonna make whatever we want, we don't care who listens to it, and we're just gonna give out CDs for free at our shows, because like we're just, you know, everybody we hang out with is poor, and like we're just gonna do it, and I don't care if anybody knows about us. And like, you know, now I think about back on it, I'm like, man, if we had like been a little smarter with some decisions and made some kind of plans, like we could have gotten farther than we did. And so now that's informed a ton of how I approach this project. And like, yeah, it is like, you do have to compartmentalize and kind of like think about it as like, all right, I'm just gonna, you know, maybe I'm doing something else. I'm somewhere else. I can't be working on music, but I have my laptop, you know, I'm traveling for a gig or whatever. And I'm going to just be sending emails to people all day and be like, hey, what can we do? What, you know, researching, like marketing and all this stuff. It's like, yeah, it's a lot to learn. And I think that's, you know, I think something as musicians should all be doing is just like always an artist, any type of artist is always about like learning, you know, kind of how it works.
In some ways it's kind of helped too. I think for me, just thinking of it like a business, because like, I think when I was younger, my mindset was, you know, I'm going to eventually write a song that enough people like that will afford me these opportunities. And it's like, maybe that hasn't changed as much, but I grew up in a much smaller town, and, you know, there was no, it was like, I was like, it was either the local cover band or you were selling out Knitting Factory in Spokane or the arena. Like there's nothing in between those two things. And so there's no way for me to like imagine, like, other than like, okay, maybe if I moved to LA or Nashville or something. And it's like, now that it's like, we have a fantastic music scene in Boise. But we have like our band, it validates the art. I feel like for me to just think of this band as like a small business, it's like, not validates it, but like, it's like, oh, I'm heading in a direction with this, and that kind of satisfies my 16-year-old self trying to like be in a band, you know?
Well, and I think like Max said, you know, we live in a society, you know, and there are certain things that you need to be able to exist in that society.
Absolutely.
And tours cost money. You know, I love to see bands have merch, you know, because I also know in my limited knowledge, you know, that that's where the artists actually get their money. You know, it's not the streams or the record labels giving, I mean, record labels do give them money, but they also, I think, the average artist earns like 17% of the money made on their album, you know? And so it's always great for me to see a band have either, you know, a CD or a shirt or something.
Yeah.
Cause I love my closet is full of band shirts, cause
same,
that's what I buy, you know? And if I can pick up a record at the, or whatever, I mean, I prefer records cause I'm a nerd that way, but you know, if I can pick up an album, I prefer physical media, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember this band name tomorrow, you know,
totally, yeah.
But if I can buy that record, you know, I've got a keepsake. I've got,
it's also just fun to like own it. I think, you know, I mean, I have Spotify, but now I just go to Record Exchange and I buy all my favorite CDs that I can find. And it's like so, so satisfying when it's like I got the new Dummy record on CD, and I was like, do you guys have the new Dummy record? And they're like, yeah, we do. And I was like, no way, I'm gonna get it right now.
I've been building up my stereo setup for the last few years, but it's all like pieces from the Reuseum, you know, like
our favorite store.
Don't let me go in there.
I love that place.
Whenever Max is feeling down, I'm like, let's just go to Ryuzia. let's go see if there's any big machines in there, you know?
Yeah. I love walking through there. It's inspiring for me, you know, to see like, oh, what could I modify this to be or something, you know? But yeah, so I love those old formats, you know. I still have the very first tape I ever purchased for myself. Oh, awesome. It was Dookie from Green Day. Yeah. You know? Hell yeah. I think I was like 10 or something. I don't even remember how old I was. I bought it from my friend's older sister, you know, and I've worn that tape out from all awesome. The years, but somehow I've managed to keep a hold of it for the last, you know, 30-ish years.
Hell yeah.
And that's something that I think is important too about physical media is, you know, not only do the artists generally make more money off of it than, you know, a penny per thousand streams or something. But yeah, I think that that's a good way to support and to, you know, tell people that you do like what they're doing and I want you to continue. So having those shirts, you know, yeah, it sucks to have to think of the business things. And I do that with my stuff too, where I will have to take a day and like, okay, this is when I'm going to answer the emails, you know, 'cause I can get so lost in just the creating that I don't.
It's actually, I think worked out also in our favor in other ways too, having shirts and stuff is, you know, other bands and promoters take you more seriously. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, you're investing money into this. Okay, well, we'll give you a chance. Like, you're hustling. I think that's also helped, you know, in more ways than we maybe initially thought that it would.
You know, when I was in my early 20s, I might have even still been a teen, I don't remember. But I tried to run a business, a landscaping business, and we're like, okay, we're gonna just walk into a bank and get a business loan and we're gonna be good. And they're like, so you want to start a business, you don't have a business plan, and you want us to give you money. And we're like, yeah. And they're like, okay, well, we really like to see people invest in themselves before we invest in them. And I think that speaks to, granted, I'm talking about a bank and you're talking about promoters, but I think same thing. I think that showing that you have bought in and invested in your art, in your music, that does.
Yeah. And if there's any bands or people who are trying to get into this listening, I think that's like the most important thing I could tell anyone is like, it's awesome to have a cool hobby and make music and be creative, but like, you know, do yourself a favor and like, you know, take it seriously. And, you know, especially when we, you know, even thinking of the logistics of how we show up and set up our stage and like how that runs. I mean, we're career audio engineers, which we definitely have a little bit of a leg up when it comes to that kind of stuff. But, you know, and it's a lot to learn. I know it can be kind of frightening for people who aren't necessarily versed in that, because again, it's like a whole other thing you have to learn how to do. But, you know, it does help, you know, it's like, we come in, we're self-contained, we have all this, you know, we're a quick setup, we get out of the way, like all this stuff, it matters, you know, in small amounts, you know, everything counts in large amounts.
I mean, one of the things too, that when we started, we initially were talking about having like a full band, you know, like we were like talking to drummers and bass players and it was like, you know, and then we were thinking, okay, let's think about this logistically. It's like, we want to be able to work on this, you know, with our busy schedules. And it's like, we just kind of like looked at each other. We're like, we're the main, you know, we're the creative driver in all of this. Like, not that anybody else couldn't be, but it's like, what's going to be the most affordable thing? Touring with four people? Actually, not even, let me back up. What's going to be the most practical thing? Trying to schedule five people to show up for a rehearsal, you know, once a week, or two of us that live half a mile from each other, you know, we can just, you know, have all of our stuff set up in the studio And it was like, okay, touring, what's more affordable? Traveling with five people or cramming all of our crap into the back of a Volvo and the two of us, you know, couch surfing it or whatever, only having money on one hotel room rather than, you know, two or three or whatever. And so it was just like, we let the monetary limitations also kind of dictate the shape that our band took. And
it's a reality of life.
I think there was, I don't know if I'm misremembering this, but I think there was like a day I came and talked to you and I was like, I don't think we're going to be a band unless we just play a show where it's just two of us.
There was.
Like, we just have to do it. Like, you just have to get out there and do it. And, you know, I think we haven't shut the door completely on the future of having more members or whatever, but like this has been working out really well for us. And, you know, I think it again, like talking about promoters and stuff like that, it's like, I think we've gotten some shows that we probably shouldn't deserve or have gotten where it's just like, yeah, but it's just two guys and they fit on stage. Like, you don't have to move anything. It's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, we have 10 inputs. Yeah. It's like, just tack us on at the end. And people are like, all right, fine.
Well, I think what you said there is super important, you know, and it's one of the pieces of advice that I try to give to people too, is just do it, you know.
Totally.
There is something to be said for, you know, polishing it before you put it out there, but also, you know, you're not going to have all the answers to everything or the best way to do stuff right off the bat, but also, if you don't start, then it doesn't go. You don't start.
Yeah, and the learned experience from just like doing, getting something out in front of the public eye is like so much, there's so much value there that you, the feedback you get, it's like, it'll change like everything for an artist. And I feel like that's universal across all types of art, you know?
And you get better the more stuff you put out too. I think, I mean, Max was really helpful for me when we started this, because I was just like, okay, how do I, you know, like, well, I don't know if it's ready to put out yet. Like, well, I don't know if I like this lyric. Like, what if we just, and Max is like, no, we're just going to put it out. It doesn't matter. We're putting it out. And I was like, you're right. We did it. We put it out and it felt good. It felt good to get it out. There's, you know, but we can look back at those things and be like, yo, you know, we learned a lot. We, you know, kind of learned more about ourselves, and that informed the next release, you know?
That's so cool to hear. Like, cause that is the way that I try to approach a lot of stuff, you know? I mean, it's just, like I said, just do it. You know, I look back at my old projects and they're bad. You know, some of them are, you know, they have like, it's not all bad, but you know, there are things I look at and I'm like, oh, that's, I don't like that. And I'm sure that, you know, you guys notice that in your songs too. I mean, every artist notices the flaws in their stuff,
absolutely.
You know, it's that whole, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You know, at some point you just have to say, this is the best that I'm going to make it right now, you know, and we'll see what the world says. And next time, maybe, you know, adjust my strategy.
It gets easier too. I think that's the thing that people don't realize, is if you haven't put something out yet, you know, the longer you wait, the harder it gets and the more miserable you'll be than if you put out something that you think maybe is subpar. But it gets easier. Like, I mean, the first song we recorded, it had a vibe and it was exactly what we needed to make. And then, you know, it informed the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And now it's like, I mean, with our latest release, like, I mean, we were kind of beating our head against the wall trying to get it mastered. And finally, Yukaya gave us like a fantastic
connection
with a mastering engineer, which he just, you know, it was like immediately, he was like, here you go. It was just like perfect. But like that song, just when we were writing it, was so much easier to create. Like, we came in, we'd played it a couple times, we'd written it like, what, like a 2 weeks before Tree Fort or something, and I came up with a guitar idea and I was like, Max, I think we should end the set with this song. This is going to be such a vibe if we end the set with this song. And and we kind of came in here, wrote it, and then we were just kind of like fine tuning lyrics and stuff. And then we just came in here one day and we're like, okay, we're going to record the whole song. And we did. We recorded it all in a day. And did we even get, were the vocals done too? Or
no, we finished up the vocal recordings. I think that's like usually what takes the longest is the vocal stuff. You know?
I just changed so many lyrics. Just like,
yeah, and just getting that right take, you know, especially with like electronic instruments, it's like, it's very easy to be very meticulous and detailed. And then things are easily repeatable. And then I'd say like guitar and like, you know, acoustic electric instruments are kind of in between where it's like, yeah, you know, if you move a microphone around, it's going to sound different. And like, if you record on a different day and it's guitar is a different temperature, it's like, it's hard to like exactly match what you had before. And like, sometimes there's like this, you know, this thought process I think a lot of artists have where it's like, oh man, this like, the initial thing that like the thing that kind of captured and solidified the idea just has like, you know, there's something about it that's kind of magical, and you're like, I want it, you know, and then you kind of get something that's a little bit more polished, and it, and you're like, oh man, did it lose some of its spark or like the authenticity? But then like, yeah, vocals is like a whole nother thing where it's like the human voice is just so, you know,
well, varied. What happens a lot of times,
you
know, too,
it's like you can never just like, are you holding the microphone?
Especially mine.
Are you, what microphone are you using? What, you know, what time of day did you record it? Like, you know, did you drink a beer first? Or, you know, like, you know, it's just like the, and cause it is like, it's a vulnerability thing too. I think like more than anything, like the vocal part and what you're saying something, you know, it's not just like a artistic expression with an instrument. It's like, this is me. This is my voice. This is what I'm saying. Like, it can be really vulnerable. And
I think too, just the nature of the songs we write, it's like, it has to sound, I don't know, like I'm so inspired by Robert Smith, and you know, it's like so much of his emotion goes into the way that he sings, and it's like, I really want to embody that too. And there was an early recording of Currency, like before we even, maybe we just named the song at that point, and none of the lyrics are this, almost none of the lyrics are the same lyrics, but the vocal take, which was also technically a horrible vocal take because I'm clipping everything, and there's like a delay on the vocals that's like baked in, that's
timed.
Like not timed right, and it's like also clipping, but it had such a vibe
it was
to
like
it.
Emotionally, it was like this,
like. And it was like, I walked in here at like 10 o'clock emotion, in the morning and I was like half asleep, and I was just like, I was just holding the mic, and you can hear like the cable, I'm like bumping it and it's cutting. It's like, but just had such a cool vibe. And even when I listened back to it now, I'm just like, oh my God. But now, but when we went back to record the vocals, we tried a bunch of different mics, and you know, we eventually settled on the one where I could move in a way that I could get the emotions that we were trying to get onto the record out. And ultimately that ended up being the final method, I guess.
I think it was Currency. There was a lyric that like caught me. It was like, my dad called today. It was really like heartfelt. Like, I don't know if that's the right word to use, but like, I don't know. It was like, oh, as I was listening to the lyrics in there, I was like, oh, this is neat, you know? And like, it just, it felt like it didn't pull me out of the song. It pulled me like into the song when I heard that part. I was like, oh, okay, awesome. You know? but yeah, no, I'm glad that you were kind of talking about that, how that came together and that emotional part of it, you know? Yeah. Doing voiceovers, I've noticed myself that, you know, I can do a deeper voice or more my normal voice. And then, you know, of course you got to do the tone for what you're reading.
Yeah. It's interesting. This is like a weird little caveat, but you know, when people do those like TikTok or like Instagram reel videos where they end the video with like the first, so like loops or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but the way that they end the video, they end it on this like upper inflection, you know, and that's why, have you ever, you know, it's just like, it just doesn't feel natural. And it's like, what they have to, what they should do is like, and that's why you should do, you know, like say the whole sentence.
I've seen
than
some of them
pausing.
Where they do it like really good, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, totally. But it's like, that's like a way that, you know, that's a super maybe obvious and boring thing
no.
that annoys me, but it's like, there, I mean, I can hear everything in our recordings too. Like Max will be like, no, it's good. You're fine. It sounds, it has the vibe. And I'll be like, yeah, but like on Currency, I was pronouncing, the way I was singing, it was like there. And Max was like, no, we got to change that. And then like on the first chorus, I say lost on portrait form. And on the second chorus, I say lost in portrait form. And I was like, but Max, I think I'm emphasizing the in a little bit too much. Should I also say on? And like, you know, and we'd already gotten like the take and he was just like, stop, stop this. This is not good. And we tried, he begrudgingly was like, sure, try it. And we tried it and it was like, okay, all right, I'm gonna shut up now.
That's the way it is sometimes though. I mean, I'm a director and, you know, sometimes you have to be like, okay, no, say it this way or, you know, it is, but also at some point you're like, okay, well, I think that's about what we're going to get, you know, but
I think it's also been interesting when we've been recording too, like that earlier version with the emotion and just the vibes, it didn't have any of the lyrics hammered down.
Yeah, I feel like
and
half
I found
of it was
that
like gibberish almost.
Most of it was gibberish and like mumbling.
If you're interested in lyric writing, is a thing that is like, I at least for us, is extremely prevalent. I've talked to other people too that, you know, that's part of it. It's like you're trying to fit the syllables into this, you know, time and the phrasing and all that.
That reminds me of something that Jesse Blake Rundle had said, that he does that with like the mumbles or the syllables and stuff. And that sometimes he gets stuck like, oh, well, I like the way the mumbles sounded, you know?
Yeah. it's weird when I do get all the lyrics, like with Currency, when Agony was like this too, because Agony in an early version, I do say Agony in the song. In the later version, I don't say anything. We kept the name. But like when we got the lyrics right, it was like so much easier to sing it. Like that vocal take was so much easier. Cause it's like, and actually now that we've played it so many times too, the way that I'm singing the chorus now feels even more right than, you know, when we first wrote
it. It's a weird thing. And it's like the song is already there. It's like you have to find it. It's like you kind of channel something. Yeah. And like, there's a way, like I said earlier, it's like you can be really diligent and kind of brute force it, but like...
Brute forcing lyrics
it's like almost impossible.
Impossible.
Yeah. And it can be, you know, we were just talking about how much we love doing this and how much fun we have recording and making cool music and stuff. But like, it can be really miserable sometimes when you're like trying to make something work and it's just like... not it, and it's just like, you know, the vibes are off or something today, like, you know, I didn't sleep good last night, or like work sucks or whatever, and you're just like, man, you know, those days, I mean, I think everybody kind of suffers for their art, and you know, it's just part of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's days where I don't want to look at my computer or camera or, you know, any of it. Absolutely. I enjoy the times when, you know, like when I go on a vacation, I often don't bring anything other than like my cell phone or something, you know, I might snap a couple of snapshots, but I'm not experiencing it the same way when I'm there. Like I'm sure that being on a stage performing at a concert is a much different experience for you than going to a show or working at a show and like paying attention to the levels and stuff.
Wildly different.
But yeah, so I mean, it's, some days I try to avoid that stuff and I just can't stand it. But some days I'm like, oh, I love all these technical aspects of it.
And I guess what's sucks, but is also good, is you kind of have to like with lyrics for me, I have to just write something. So I'm either like typing notes in my phone or I'm journaling or something or just doing a voice memo. because if I don't, I tend to just start to lose the rhythm, I guess, if that makes sense. Like,
okay.
I just, like, I kind of have to keep the machine moving. Otherwise, I just, like, I don't, even, like, this last month, I got like, crazy, crazy sick after the Gang of Four show. Like, just couldn't do anything. And, like, it's good. It's going to be a struggle to get, we had to cancel three
shows.
That was,
we were supposed to go out of town and play our first
show. Yeah, we were supposed to
play our shows out of town. And,
And I was just, like, fever, like, shaking. I actually was, like, hallucinating because we submitted the song, but I submitted it while I had a fever. And I, like, am texting Max, and I'm like, oh my god, it's not ready yet. What are we gonna do this? And I was just, like, freaking out, and he's like, you're freaking out because you have a fever right now. And it was totally true. I know it's gonna be a bit of a slog getting back into the flow of things. I had lost my voice too. I ended up with, like, bronchitis and laryngitis, and we were like, let's come in. We have this song we're recording, and it was just like, oh my god, I can't even think about it. You know, it was just kind of miserable. So it's gonna be a slog to get back into the rhythm of it, because I just took, you know, it's been over a month now since I got sick, and it's just finally doing better. But
our bodies have a wonderful tendency to fail us at just the best time.
It was like the Gang of Four show. I was so
That was like that day. You're like, I feel like crap. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
I was like, I had water with, like, crazy electrolytes in it on stage, and then I had tea with, like, honey and throat coat, and, like, in between every song, I was just, like, chugging both of them. Just,
man.
It was gnarly.
That's intense, though. But I mean, that shows your dedication to it too. You know, I mean, pushing through, 'cause that sounds miserable.
It was. And the subsequent week and a half, well, like, what was it, 3 weeks? Yeah, the subsequent month afterwards was awful.
Oh, man.
It was.
Yeah, and I'm glad people said we got some good feedback from that show.
I was like,
really?
Walked off the stage, and I was like, that was the worst show we have ever played. Oh my god! And I was like, looking, I could see, like, a few people that I knew in the audience that hadn't seen us, and I was like, no, not this one. You know, why couldn't they have seen Tree Fort or something, like, you know, anything but this one? Because I'm literally dying.
Yeah.
So how many times have you guys done Tree Fort? Was this your first one?
Yeah. This was our first one.
Okay.
Yeah, Tree Fort. We weren't a band really last Tree Fort.
If you've only.
Yeah.
We'd, like, written, we'd had, like, I don't know, two or three songs, maybe.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super cool. I love when, I mean, Tree Fort's got so many. Such a wide variety of venues and genres, and I do enjoy electronica. I went to actually the Neurolux for the first time during this last Tree Fort. I can't remember, her name was Jelly something.
Oh, Jelly Haha.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. That was such a cool show.
It was a super cool show.
I keep getting her ads, and I'm like, this is so sick. Like, the synth sounds so good. Yeah.
So when you guys are on stage, what are you, like, doing guitar and vocals then?
Yeah, I have the easy job. I just have guitar and vocals, and half the time I'm not singing and playing at the same time, so it's pretty chill for me. Max is...
I just push buttons.
He's belittling himself. Max's synth rig is insane, and... It's funny, like, I'm a guitar nerd, and, you know, I'll watch rig rundown videos, and, like, like, this rig is based off of, like, an amalgamation of Adam from War on Drugs' rig, and Always' rig, and Dive's rig, and, but it's, like, pretty basic, like, when it comes down to it.
It doesn't look basic to me.
It's, like, I mean, it's just, like, you know, I'm not doing anything crazy. Max has, like... Not only does he have the two synths, but he has, like, the Octatrack, which is MIDI sequencing. Let me try and describe this for the layman, because if Max describes it, you know, all of our brains will explode. But basically, there's, like, a brain drum machine, and there's different like songs, like sequences, and each song has like two to five sequences. What is the last place we met have? Or no,
Sleep
sorry.
Sleep Through the Night. Yeah,
Sleep Through the Night. It's like eight.
I trimmed it. I've got it down to like six now.
Yeah, so there's six for I Sleep Through the Night, which is the first song released. There's six different,
they're
bars.
Patterns.
Six different patterns. And Max is switching in between each of them. And each of those patterns has different MIDI sequenced moments that are triggering the synthesizers and samples within the unit itself. And so, so the song, when you're hearing it, we're not pressing play. Like Max isn't pressing play and we're playing through it. He's cueing the next part of the song like the whole time so that the drum pattern will change, the synth pattern. And I didn't know this was a thing until I met Max. And he was trying to explain. He was trying to get me to do like a one man show, and like broke. And I was like, dude, I can't turn this drum machine on without your help, like, let alone get a sequence going. And so it's crazy. And he MIDI sequences his, like, the effects are MIDI sequence, like the and then he'll like.
Does he only
live,
have two hands?
Yeah, he only has two hands, so to play all that, it's a mothership. So.
Well, I've seen some synth builds, and they can get crazy. So
it's insane. We're figuring the next sequence of our live rig is going to be. I have two pedals that are MIDI controllable, and so we'll eventually figure out how to add my MIDI chain into his. So I won't have to. I'll have to do even less,
and I'll have to do more.
So I have to do more.
No, it's cool. It's really important to me for it to be live and there to be risk involved. I think there's like we just did a live performance on University Pulse Radio, and like when we're playing Currency, there's like a couple parts where like I feel like I'm doing nothing because I'm just kind of like standing there, but it is like there, everything is like being generated by the instruments live. And I've seen awesome bands that use tracks, and like it's just a reality of the production environment that we live in now. And like I think there's ways you can do it really well, and I've also seen bands that do it like horribly, and it's like really disappointing. I'm not gonna go there, I've been really excited to see these bands, and like especially the some that are like in our genre, and it's like it's just a laptop and then people standing in front of it, and like that's not, you know, I know not everybody is like, I think when I was younger I was definitely kind of like courting like nerds to come talk to me and be like, oh, look at my stuff. And like I realize that like now that I've become more mature, it's like nobody really cares that much, and if they do, you might not want to talk to them.
And Max has transcended it all by creating the most complicated
it's important. It's like I want to have fun and actually perform my songs, and this is just the way I found it, to where it makes it feel like I am doing something, and it's not just like, it is electronic. A lot of it is like pre-programmed, but I am, you know, if we miss, we're not just listening to like a click track and a guide, and we're not like, it's not like chorus 3-2, like, you know, we're not playing, we're not in a worship band or whatever. So like, you know, like that part of it. And then like, if you're playing to a giant track like that, like I have a solo performance I do called Enigma Machine, and that is just like, it's just me, so I'm literally like pressing play on a stem, and then I like dance around and like act like a fool on stage.
It's pretty
sick. And that's so like that's to me, that's like, that's a performance, and like I'll pick a keyboard part and play that, and then sing and whatever. True. Like, but for this, it's like I'm more of a supporting member, like I guess as far as stage presence goes, and yeah, I'm managing the big tracks and like, you know, all the drums and stuff, and it's very like interactive for me, and I can mute different parts and, you know, kind of affect a bunch of different parameters at once. And then, you know, the nitty gritty stuff where it's like, oh yeah, I've got program changes. So like it, that basically means I don't have to, like, in between each song, I don't have to go around and be like, all right, change this thing, change this thing, change this thing. Cause like that just becomes unmanageable. And
I think it was during the Jelly Haha set. Oh, like yeah, there was actually one of the pieces of the kit stopped for a while. And
yeah, well, they had
their PC shutdown.
Their PC shutdown that was like, I think, I don't know exactly how it was set up, but they
had live
synths. MIDI sequencing.
It was a really sophisticated setup, and it was really, really well done.
And the drummer just like was like,
yeah,
she was amazing.
Absolutely,
yeah,
just took the.
Yeah, there's something about like that kind of like I like to see. Like there's some sort of risk or danger involved with the performance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like, it's important to not lose that, you know?
Well,
you have to be a little bit scared.
Yeah.
You got to have some showmanship to your concert. That's why people go to a concert, you know, and you can have showmanship in the performance, you know, and with a track, but there's also something to be said about like seeing people risking things in front of an audience.
It also makes it too, like, you know, we're like, oh, this chorus is really hitting right now. Like, let's run it again. It's like we have the flexibility to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Or like what will happen is I won't be paying attention to how many bars have gone by, and I'll start like on the second half of the loop, and then Max will just be kind of like, wait, because we got to start at the beginning. And, you know, so there's some... foolproof, idiot proof. We Joseph proof it a little bit.
Well, and I saw for the first time opening, it was Coheed and Cambria were here, and opening for them was Magic Sword, and that was a wild performance on there. I mean, that was like a play
the
on the stage.
Stuff
but yeah, I think that it's really neat though, like too, like you mentioned there, is how all the time you see videos of like DJs in like dance clubs and stuff, they'll like be carrying on a certain beat for a certain period of time. And it's awesome to hear that you guys do that in your performances. I mean, not DJing, but you're able to, you know, carry on or extend and modify. And that's definitely something you wouldn't be able to do if you were just playing a track, you know?
Yeah. I think a real performance is like, it's interactive, it's responsive, and it's like the audience, I think, is a participant in a big way, and like, you know, feeding off that energy and giving out the energy to like draw the crowd in is like, you know, it takes a lot of thought to kind of like get there, you know? And I think that's another thing I've been really proud of, like what we've been able to do. And, you know, actually think about the little moments and like what's going to happen here and whatever this, you know, this transition is going to be like this. And, you know, we want to leave some room for spontaneity, but it really matters. Like you can tell when people are like, know what's like, this is what the performance is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, yeah. We still do it at some of our shows, but our first show, we really leaned into it heavy. We had like these really kind of atmospheric samples and like kind of audiobook clippings and movies segments just to kind of lull people into.
Yeah,
because
believe it or not, despite the fact we're doing a podcast, we don't really like to talk that much. So,
well, I was going to say,
speak for yourself. Yeah. I love talking.
You know, slightly changing a topic on it. You know, what drew you guys to be on a stage? You know, I mean, that's something that would terrify a good portion of the people out there. What drew you guys to wanting to perform in front of live audiences?
I've always just loved doing it. Just being, I think, well, actually, I don't know. I went, there was a, I don't know. I don't even know what show it was. I went to a concert when I was like 14. And I was like, oh my God, I need to be a lead singer. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be my career. I can't really tell anybody that though when you're 14, because they just are like,
sure.
They're like, oh, why are you so obsessed with being in the spotlight? And you're like, well, because I'm fantastic. No.
I mean, yeah, I think there is like a certain amount of of ego to it, and you know, that's
I
think you just kind of have to admit that. But also, like, yeah, I don't know, there's something innate, I think, some people like, and I know people can learn it and people can do it, and there's ways to do, like, overcome any fear, learn anything. But you know, I think growing up I was always either like doing theater or, you know, I did dance and like all this stuff when I was a kid, and like I was always kind of like, oh, like people are afraid of this, like I like doing this, this is fun, you know. And and like public speaking is like, I know like some people it's like their worst nightmare, and I've just you know, being on stage and, you know, even as a support, because, you know, like I said, we do work in venues and stuff, like being on stage in that role too can kind of be a little, you know, when you get up on a stage and there's 1,000 people in a room, and like even if it's just like in between the set and the lights are all blue and you can't really see who's on stage, it's like, you know, there's a certain level of like, oh, like there's a bunch of people, like there's 1,000 people looking at me right now, you know. And like
there was one moment when a drummer's snare was just loosened, and I had to run up onto the drum riser with a he like signaled me over and with a drum key and tighten his snare while he was playing it, like, and it was, you know, in front of,
so there's just kind of I feel like it's not a good answer, but I feel like there's just something
innate. I think it's
like
an honest answer.
It's just like I've just never really been that afraid of it. And it's,
I think also too, I saw how much it, I felt how much it moved me to see like a performer, like, you know, a lead singer sing their songs and just put so much emotion into it and be so vulnerable. And it just, you know, I felt like, like Max said earlier, like he listened to Enya and gained consciousness. Like that was for me what happened. It was like, I saw a lead singer putting their heart into performing, and I was like, that is so pure and beautiful and so cool. And it made me feel like alive, and I had to do it.
I think there's something like, I'm not to get overly like philosophy major about this, but like there is something I think people are drawn to, at least like vulnerability and truth, and just like, I think a good performance can make people uncomfortable, you know? And like when somebody is really out there bearing their soul and doing something that is risky, like I think some people can shy away from it. This is a short anecdote I have about this, but I saw Sean Nicholas Savage play live at Tree Fort a few years ago. And this amazing singer songwriter from Canada that I'm totally obsessed with. And it was a very like odd performance. It was like two keyboard players, and Sean is like, he doesn't wear shoes, and he's got two little like risers, and it was at the Linen Building, and there was like 25 people there. And like my wife and her sister were there, and like he's like running around dancing on stage and like jumping up on these things, and he's just like the most amazing vocalist. And I'm like weeping. I'm like, this is so like these songs mean so much to me, and like this is so like brave and like emotionally like affecting. And like and then I like look over at my wife and just like, oh, they're like super, this is like making them super uncomfortable right now. It's like, you know, there's not the context for that. And I think, you know, I think people are drawn to that, you know. It's like, and it's a real expression of like humanity. And like,
it's like every time I see Lou perform any of his projects, like Street Fever, I've yet to see Street Fever, but I've seen Lasher two or three times now. And every time I'm choking up, because he puts so much intensity into their performances, and it's like, it's so inspiring.
I've had a lot of experiences in my life where I'll go to, I go to a lot of concerts. I especially used to, but the amount of like openers that I've discovered and been a huge fan of, that when I was 18, I went to a specialized dance in down in Hollywood, and I saw this band from Florida called like Whole Wheat Bread. And like 2 or 3 years later, I moved up to Idaho, and they came into town, and I was like, yeah. And there were like five people in, and it was at the venue.
Oh, right.
And so they were like, you know, half a dozen people. Most of them were like high schoolers or whatever. Nobody knew the lyrics except me. But like the singer saw that I was singing along and connected, and like, but that was one of those groups that like, I wasn't there to see the band, but their performance and their words, and it all just, it clicked. And I think that live music especially has that ability to make you feel something more. 'Cause it's more than just an auditory experience. It's a physical experience. You're feeling the music as it hits you, and you're watching somebody put their emotions into it. And
absolutely.
Yeah. I think that there's definitely music in general for me is super important and involved in everything that I'm doing, but seeing a performance is definitely a different experience. And especially if it's a truly live performance, like what you guys are capable of putting on, you know?
Yeah. And it can really like make or break. There's so many bands that I've gotten to see now that when I do see them live, I'm kind of like a little bummed, because I was like, I wanted them to, they kind of phone it in or something.
I saw Everclear for the first time a few years back, and I had heard that, like, I loved them in like 99, you know, and I had heard that they didn't hold up live. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I wasn't lied to.
Well, they're coming to Boise soon, so get ready. You can catch them
in. Yeah, I'm good.
Not to turn this into like a smack talk session, but yeah.
No.
Like I think the one that was like that for me was I saw Beck play at this music festival in Phoenix, and like I was there to see Animal Collective, which is a whole other thing I'll get into, but I won't get into. But then like I'm like, all right, I like Beck, I'll stick around for Beck, and it was just like it was so pro and like so much of an arena show. I was like, this just is like it's too. Like it's too clean, you know, it's like it's too safe or something, I don't know. So like I, you know, and it sounded great and all this, and you know, I think there is something like the authenticity part of it is really important.
I kind of have to psych myself up too before our shows, because I get my head so much and I have to kind of give myself like what do you call it? Those not qualifiers, what's tequila. The word? Yeah, whiskey. Yeah, I kind of have to like tell them like, okay, like why are you doing this?
Affirmations.
You know, like, okay, you need to affirmations. Thank you. Yeah, and just because it's like, it worked. The Treefort show, I was just lucky because it was like all week long we were just seeing an incredible performance after incredible performance, and we were playing right before Lasher, and I was like, I can't let Lou. Take all of the credit for being the most passionate performer. We can't let him down. And so I was like, I put everything I had in, and it was, you know, it was amazing. It was so much fun. And I, you know, I think the Gang of Four show, I felt so shitty that I was just like,
it kind
of
worked
dying. Yeah. But it kind of worked. Yeah. It was like the sad boy element was maybe
well,
exacerbated.
Where can people listen to your music now? And then also, where can they follow you to find out about when you do have live performances?
We're probably the most active on Instagram. I have promised a bunch of people that I will start posting on our Bandcamp more about upcoming shows. But we're on Bandcamp. You can hear all of our music on any streaming platform.
Instagram.
Deep Heaven Band on Instagram. I think it's Deep Heaven Band on pretty much every form of major social media. It is actually Deep Heaven Band on every form. And
Spotify
so,
is always a good place to listen.
Spotify, you can purchase everything on Bandcamp and iTunes. If you like the digital copy.
Yeah. And we're gonna have some archival quality. Physical media coming out soon, because that's really important. Yeah. We just talked about it.
If you want t-shirts, you can get those on our Shopify store, which can be accessed via our link tree on our Instagram.
Well, excellent. Yeah. I appreciate you both taking the time to talk with me. Is there anything that you two or either of you would like to say that I haven't talked about? I know we've had a wide ranging.
No, it's a great conversation. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
This was fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both. I've enjoyed getting to know you, and hopefully the audience has as well. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to find more podcasts, check out BoiseArtScene.com. Be sure to check out Deep Heaven on Spotify, Instagram, and everything else.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Morgan.
Thanks. Morgan.